All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound. And you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to the DFO Rundown Podcast with Frank Saravalli and Jason Greger on dailyfaceoff.com.
Welcome to episode 274 of the DFO Rundown, as always brought to you by Betano.ca. The game starts now at Betano.ca, where, of course, a little bit of a lighter week in the NHL, but there's still games ongoing up until got games today and tomorrow. And then, of course, you have the All-Star break, where the best 12 players, or 12 of the best players, I should say, will go at it in a new revamped skills competition. You can have a lot of fun with that. And, of course, the Pro Bowl. I don't think you're going to go on that. But some interesting NBA games for you to play at Betano.ca. I'm Jason Greger alongside Frank Saravalli. And, you know, it's interesting. There are some teams still playing that will have their bye weeks after the All-Star break. Majority of them are on it right now. Frank, and so there is lots to talk about, but let's start with the big news, the Columbus Blue Jackets. You know, they got Patrick Laine entering the players program. You have Fantilli getting injured last night. You got Juracek spouting off that he deserves way more ice time, man. They got a lot going on for a team at the bottom of the standings.
Yeah, they really do. Like, it's, I don't know, kind of reaching one of those points where I wake up and I'm like, is today the day? Like, which one's the day that we see the Columbus Blue Jackets step up and make a GM change, a full sale, wholesale changes? Because it kind of feels like it's devolving into the theater of the bizarre there. And obviously not an environment that anyone is particularly happy with. And, you know, we'll start with David Juracek. It kind of feels like a simmering situation there. If you read the reporting from Aaron Portsline, I mean, there was, as some people, you know, as Portsline pointed out, there were some people wondering whether Juracek would even report to Cleveland, AHL Cleveland, on Saturday after he was sent down. So he didn't play Friday night, left Calgary, flew across the continent to Cleveland, gets there, and then does play Saturday night, and then has some kind of really pointed words. And frankly, the Blue Jackets responded to him. And, you know, Juracek, who, if you're not familiar with his game, he's the number 6 overall pick from a couple years back. And he's someone that I think right now, today, you could make the argument he is the Blue Jackets' second best defenseman behind only Zach Werenski. And he's that good, but for whatever reason, they don't want to clear a logjam in front of him, and they continue to play guys like Andrew Peak and Boakvist and Jake Bean, whoever it might be, the fact that you'd let any of those guys sort of get in the way of your number six overall pick, and depending on how you rank things, whether it's, you know, Fantilli or Denton Mateychuk or Yiricek, he's somewhere in your top three of your prospects and certainly should be a big part of your team moving forward. And so he's been sent up and down. He's been healthy scratched. And again, let's remind everyone where the Blue Jackets are in the standings. Their season's over. They're not playing for the playoffs. Like, why would you go through this and, you know, even risk angering your top, you know, one of your top prospects? And so I don't know. I mean, I read the quotes and I don't really understand it. The Blue Jackets said over the weekend that what Yiricek is feeling is the quote Amazon effect, where you order something and you want it right away. And man, I don't really understand that. The quote was, "I get it. My daughter wants her own car. She's 13 years old. It's the Amazon effect. Everybody wants it now." Comparing David Yiricek to a 13-year-old girl is a little odd to me.
Yeah. Well, I think a big one, you know, you talk about the manager. Managers really don't make now they obviously decide if a guy goes up or down, but you know, Pascal Vincent's the one who's deciding on ice time. So, you know, he's the one that should be, you know, commenting on, you know, why he isn't playing on, in my opinion, right? Like in a healthy organization, well, now you hope that your coach and GM are on the same page. And I know lots of GMs I talk to say, "Hey, I don't make decisions on young players, but if a young player isn't playing, then I'm going to send him to the minors." So, you know, you have that opportunity with Yiricek. Like, I saw Yiricek's comments. He thought, "Well, you know what? I should be on the power play." I'm like, dude, Nemec is on the power play because Dougie Hamilton's hurt. Let's call a spade a spade. If Dougie Hamilton isn't hurt, he ain't on the power play, right? And so, like, to me, I never love it when a young guy starts comparing. Well, look at this guy over there. He's getting a better opportunity than me. You know,
I think it's just eye test for me. Like, I look at his game now, and I'm like, he's better than most of what they have.
But he's not better than Werenski on the power play, right? I think we'd agree on that.
Okay, but when Werenski was out, Boqvist played on the power play.
Yeah.
So and why? Yeah.
Well, Boqvist has been pretty good. You know,
he's a novelty defenseman. He's an undersized, somewhat creative power play guy.
Yeah, that's what he is. You're right. Like, I don't know. There's not a lot of guys who are running first unit power plays with 40 NHL games experience, is all I'm saying. Like, it's... If he would have just said, "I just want to be in the lineup every day," that I can live with. When you start wanting to get into, "Well, I deserve to be on special teams because two other guys in the league are on it," like, I don't know.
Let's just start with being in the lineup, just on pure eye test alone. Yes,
play him.
Well, yeah, on pure eye test and stats and everything else, he deserves to be in that lineup in their top six on a nightly basis. We can talk about usage after the fact, but he should be playing, especially when your season's lost. What are you prioritizing? Some of these guys are heading for buyouts. Peak is like minus 45 over the last two seasons.
Yeah. Like, unless they think they're trying to use some of these guys as trade bait, Frank. That's the only
trade bait. These guys wouldn't even be waiver claims.
Yeah. I don't argue with you, but I'm just saying that's where the organ, like, to me, it's more the head coach who would need to answer about the ice time. That's all I'm saying. Like, but it does.
What is your overall? This is the point I made when I did Eastern Conference team objectives. My point for the Columbus Blue Jackets was develop a cohesive plan. If you can tell me what your plan has been for Yiricek all season long in a nutshell, I would believe you. But I don't think they can.
Yeah, and that's fair. And that's a bad organization doesn't have a plan for their players, and you don't communicate it well enough. Like, I'll say this, the fact that he was healthy scratch that's idiotic. Either send him down. There is zero reason to have him in the press box for more than two games. I'm sorry, it's inexcusable, because guess what? You can just send him to the minors. And while young guys might not like it, playing 25 minutes in the AHL is infinitely better for their development than sitting in the press box every few games or playing 10 minutes a night in the NHL.
He's got nothing to prove there. He goes there and has a 3-assist game, 3-point game as a defenseman. Like, it's not like he's not an AHL defenseman.
No, I'm not saying that he is, but my point, well, I will say this, there's nothing wrong with gaining confidence as a player, right? I'm not a big believer in nothing to prove stuff. You always have stuff to prove as a young defenseman. You can learn your game. And you know what? All I'm saying is if they play him in the minors and they play him a ton, I'd rather do that than sit in the press box.
That's fair.
In the press box does nothing. Nothing. At least in the minors, his confidence is rising. You know what? He's on the power play. He's doing everything he wants. That's great. So then when he is called up, he's ready to play. But sitting a young kid in the press box, I've always thought was moronic. Now, if it's a game or two here to learn a message, that's fine. Or he's tired because he's a young guy. I'm not saying he is. But, you know, we've seen teams do that with some young players where you give him a little bit of a rest here and there. That's okay. But when I looked at how many times he was healthy scratched, that to me is the bigger issue here. And to me, that's all on the coach.
Well, whether it's the coach or not, Jarmo Kekalainen's halfway down the plank.
Wow.
That's hard to argue that.
Yeah, the results are there. They had a little run there where I think they made the playoffs 4 years in a row. But since then, it's been downhill again. And they're back to kind of pre-playoff Columbus Blue Jackets, a team that didn't really do much.
Third longest tenured GM in the league, one playoff round win to show for 10 years. Plus, like, let's go back to, as you said, last year was their worst year in franchise history for an expansion team that had a few rough ones. Yeah. That was last year. And then this year is no better. In fact, I would argue worse, because you've now in a year where you again went out and spent assets and free agent money. You pay a big contract to Severson. You trade for Provorov. Like, you draft Fantilli. You should be going up. They're going sideways or down, and that's no place to be. But I also want to touch on Patrick Laine and his decision to step away into the player assistance program. And it's not really related to Laine. In fact, I think there takes a lot of courage to do that and to say, you know what, I need to prioritize where I'm at with my mental health. And I need to take some time off to get that in order. But I think one sort of concerning, I don't know if you want to call it a trend, but we've seen a couple things now this month of January that have popped up that I've seen some teams use mental health as a crutch. And I think that's really dangerous. Like, we look to the Calgary Flames with Dylan Dubé and his leave for mental health. Now, I'm not saying that or reporting that Dylan Dubé is part of this Hockey Canada investigation and that he's one of the five players who's been ordered to surrender to police in London, as we saw Alex Formanton was the first to surrender over the weekend. But he is one of five players that's currently on leave, and he was on the 2018 World Junior team. So draw whatever connections you want to that. I'm sorry, like, you can't put out a release saying that you're taking time away from the team for mental health and to please respect me. That's as much on the player as it is the team, because I don't know what he told the team. And yeah, I mean, if you were part of it, and that is what ultimately ends up happening, I mean, I guess your mental health has been struggling for a bit, considering what's happened here. But I want to take it a step further. And there was an incident that popped up and didn't really get much attention or press. But when Ilya Samsonov went down to the Marlies a couple weeks back, there was kind of a weird thing that played out when he made his way back to the NHL. He sits there for 10 days, practices, doesn't play a game, comes back and practices, and then the Leafs didn't make him available to the media for the first day of practice, which is obviously a big story. You know, your so-called top goalie coming into the year has done a hard reset. Typically, reporters would speak to that player. But in this case, the Leafs didn't make him available. And it was what Sheldon Keefe said afterwards, after their practice, that really kind of like stood out to me. And I'll just read you the quote, because I think it's important for context. He said, "What he's going through now, part of it's physical and more of it's mental. He said, you guys, meaning the media, are all fine people, but when you're going through something, it doesn't help. It hurts. We're here to help and support the players. Time will come when you'll get a chance to speak with him, I'm sure. But we're trying to do everything we can to get the player back to being himself and bringing him back here. To throw him out here and have to answer all sorts of questions is not conducive to the goal. And I hear that and I'm like, so wait a second. Media are the reason why, like, are causing bad mental health for someone? That doesn't seem right. And I just feel like there's been this crutch now. We've reached this point where it's okay to talk about it. But, like, first off, let's not confuse bad behavior with mental health, if that was the case. And let's definitely not confuse poor performance with mental health. So I applaud Patrick Laine for having the courage to step up and do it and come out and be so public with it. In his Instagram post, you know, did some explaining. But I think it kind of gives, when other people use it in an inauthentic way, it kind of really takes away from having the real conversation.
It's an insult to people who get up every day and grind, people who are dealing with depression and dealing with lots of other mental health issues. And there's lots of them. Trust me, in society, there's tons of people doing it every day. And you know what?
Just for candor, I'm one of those people sometimes.
Right.
I went through a funk during the holidays and I just wasn't myself. And, you know, I didn't talk about it with anyone, didn't make it public. But sometimes I'm one of those people just want to, like, be straight up with everyone.
My mom dealt with depression for many years. And thankfully she doesn't anymore. She did a lot of work. And to me, the part that I get annoyed by is when people, you know what, you might have a rough patch for a week or two. I'm talking about people that have serious mental health issues. And I find now teams and individuals and people try to use it as everybody's going to feel sorry for me. So you know what, now no one's going to ask me about it. And it's an easy way to avoid what the real problem here is. And I agree. I think it's insulting to those. And really, the teams have to be very careful about not just wanting to use it. Oh, let's use mental health because no one's going to question us about it. And it's become a crutch. And I agree with you. And I think it's very hurtful and demeaning to those who do have serious, legit mental health problems. And they battle through it and they push through it because there's lots of people that do it all the time. And then to have somebody who's, you know, a public eye figure, almost just I got mental health issues. They've never talked about it. Now you look at a guy like Oliver Shillington, look how long away he was from the game. That to me is
20 months.
That is a legit case. And you know what? I love the fact that he's back, but it's when you have mental health that bad, like he did, it's not just I go away for a week and now everything's good. That's not how it is for serious cases. You might be down in the dumps and losing your confidence. That's not depression, right? That's the ups and downs of life.
That's kind of the distinction I wanted to make is we're not saying that Samsonov hasn't had a hard time or didn't go through a tough stretch mentally.
But it wasn't because the media asked him a question about his game. Stop that. That's such a BS. Give me a break.
That plus, like, he's also really one of the most affable guys in that locker room, and he loves answering questions. It seems like he loves doing media. You saw how emotional he was when he came back and has played well. So clearly that part of him has been aided. But when you go through and you not only have this season and you not only have the worst save percentage in the league and the worst save percentage among any goalie in Toronto Maple Leafs history for that long of a stretch, like, that's just poor performance. That's not mental health. And that's the part that really kind of drives me nuts is you can't just equate one with the other. Like, do they sometimes go hand in hand? For sure. But that's not a reason to not have the discussion. And so I wanted to bring it up because it kind of feels like we're reaching this point in society where it's like, you know what? Mental performance is such a huge part of your game. And there's no question about that. But when you hit a rough patch on the ice, it doesn't always mean it's that. And it's certainly not the media.
No. And I think it is a slippery slope because you don't want that bleeding in to any of people. All of us, you know, oh, geez, look, you know what? I had a bad few games. Well, now I have mental health problems. No, don't demean it. Don't diminish it. The part of athleticism, part of life is some days you're up, some days you're down. Right. But you talk to people who have suffered through severe depression and for months on end, man, it is not pretty. There's lots of other mental health issues that can last a long time. And when I agree with you, Frank, I'm leery of it being used too often because it demeans those people. And there's so many in society, men, people probably listening, watching this pod right now that have gone through the battle themselves. And I don't like, to me, I found it's insulting to them when you try to lump everything under one umbrella, first of all, right? It's too wide of a scope, right? It's like sexual abuse. There used to be rape, but now everything's sexual abuse. Well, they're not all the same and not remotely the close. And I think with mental health, you might be lacking confidence sometime. You might have a tough day. That's okay. But that's not a mental health severe issue that limits you all the time. I think we do need to be a little bit better at not just haphazardly throwing it out there because it's going to garner people saying, oh, well, sorry for you.
Yeah. I just think it's an important discussion to have. I'm yes, not making totally. A, you know, grand, you know, stand or saying anything. It's important to point all of this out, I think, because we hear some of it. We hear a lot more now than we did a few years ago, and we're going to continue to hear more. And it's just like, you have to sift through what it all means. Cause then the next thing is, well, can we not be critical of Samsonov because he was having a mental health spell? Like, I mean, where do you draw the line? And it's like, everyone understands the emotions of playing and things like that, but it's been the same for 100 years, like literally. There's more focus, social media, there's more money, more spotlight, all those things. But the guys in the 80s and 90s there wasn't any different then. And, you know, did players go through hard times? Of course. Patrick Laine deserves to be applauded, but let's not confuse these things. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. So you're saying Laine and Dubé might be on a different category is what you're saying.
Yes. And let's see what happens in London with the police investigation. But if he's part of it, to take a leave for mental health is a really bad look.
Yeah, next Monday is when the London police are going to have their press conference to really kind of outline everything. So I'm guessing the other players involved will be turning themselves in between today and next Monday. Now let's get to some things on the ice, Frank. Brandon Gallagher, you know, hard-nosed player. We haven't seen a chicken wing hit in a long time where, you know, you flare out the elbow as blatant as he did on a guy. And not that it makes it any less egregious, but, you know, he did it to Pelech, who, you know, has had concussion issues before. Like, that's a terrible hit. And he got 5 games, but I'll be honest, I couldn't believe that it was like, oh, it's a phone hearing, so it's a maximum 5 games. It was like they determined, right, the hit's 5 games, so we're not going to open up Pandora's box. There was an opportunity to really send a message. The league finally got those hits out of the game. We haven't seen one of those hits in a long time. And that one was a blatant one in the middle of the ice where there was zero reason to do it. I would have liked a hard five is a lot, but to me, that should be a 10-game suspension. If you want plays out of your league, you need to crack down severely when they come in because that sends the message.
Do you know what the Gallagher suspension reeked of? A Department of Player Safety that doesn't want to open themselves up to appeal, which is kind of nonsensical because this one would have stood up.
And the appeal process, Frank, we all know it's a joke anyway. By the time your appeal gets heard, the suspension's done anyway.
But it, if it was like, well, it could be 6, it could be 5, you know, maybe we could go to 7. Maybe we'll just send the same message with 5 and save ourselves a whole bunch of trouble. That's kind of what it felt like. It was like, let's just put our heads down here and get through this one.
Hey, Rafi Torres got 40 games. You could have easily given it 10.
I mean, I'm with you. Like it's funny because it's one of the rare Department of Player Safety rulings that everyone was actually kind of in agreement on. Like, yeah. Social media, you know, I said, is this 6 games? Because I knew Gallagher doesn't have a long history. And it's like, well, they don't typically come down on first-time offenders. And there didn't seem to be an injury on the play. now what? So I say six and I'm getting torched on Twitter saying, oh, this is 10 all day long. And it's rare to see that much sort of uniformity in the response and then the league be half of that.
Yeah, I was surprised by it. I don't, you know what? Hey, got a suspension, was worthy of suspension. He's not appealing it wisely. And I think there's hopefully, and you know what? We haven't seen one of these. So maybe it was just a one-off and it's not going to open up Pandora's box. And suddenly we're going to see chicken wings all over the place again, the NHL. I really hope not, because.
Yeah, I don't think so.
They've done a really good job
getting rid of it.
And, yes, no, they have. I applaud
it. Your point is well taken in that. Because they've done such a good job getting rid of it, the time that you see one, that's the time to crack down again.
Yes.
Send a message and say, okay, we've already eliminated these. Don't think they're making a comeback. Here's eight games or whatever it might be.
Whatever it is.
10% of the season, it's a long time.
Yeah.
But that's not what happened.
No. A few other things, Frank. The races now is we do have a few games, of course, this week. But the races for the wild cards in both conferences, man, are looking great. If you like races, it's there's not a lot of race really necessarily. Like the Hurricanes look like they're going to catch the Rangers because the Rangers are in free fall.
We've been saying that for weeks. I was just going to say the Filip Hedl injury, so unfortunate. Working his way back, spends time in the Czech, and you're thinking, okay, this is someone that after a long battle with a concussion here is finally going to get back in the mix. And then an optional skate with three players on the ice ends up colliding with a teammate. And now he's out for the season. Like,
that's awful.
It kind of changes the complexion of the Rangers deadline because they were really in the market for a third line center with Hedl out. Now, some are wondering, do they need two centers? Do they need to add two guys to that forward group to help spur things along? Whatever is the case, there's something a little bit off with the Rangers and has been for 6 to 8 weeks.
Yeah.
Which one are the real Rangers? The group that started the year on a tear or the group that they've been for the last 2 months?
Yeah, I think somewhere in between, to be honest. I didn't think they were as good as they were early on. I don't think they're as bad as they are now. The big question to me is Shesterkin. Like, is he going to find his game or not? It's been a real less than I would say below average season for Shesterkin so far this year. And there really hasn't been a time where he's gotten his game consistently to the level where he wants. And I think that's going to impact them a lot. If Shesterkin finds his game at some point here, and the odds would tell me eventually he should, based on his track record, he's been a really good goalie a great goalie for a few years in New York, but this has just not been his year. And that's opened up the door for the Hurricanes. The Philadelphia Flyers, Frank, maybe a reality setting in. They've lost five in a row. Hart's obviously gone away from the team. They got some injuries and they're opening up the door. The Islanders are four back of them. Pittsburgh's five with four games in hand. Even New Jersey's five with three games in hand. The race in the East is really, I'm not even sure it's for the wild card spot. It might be for third place in the Metro, as you might have the five teams in the Atlantic as the Red Wings have a 5-point lead right now on the Islanders for a wild card spot. So, and the one team though, because of games in hand, is the Pittsburgh Penguins. Right, like the Pittsburgh Penguins are right there. You look at points percentage, they're right below the Flyers. The Pens, with all their problems so far this year, they still might be in the driver's seat to get the number three slot going down the second half in the Metro.
I like statistically, you're right, but I just look at this team and even sort of the way that they kind of limped into the break. Loss at Vegas, loss at Arizona, like thumped in Arizona, and that weird own goal.
Yeah.
Shootout loss to the Panthers, and then you beat the Habs in OT. I don't know. I don't. Everything that you think kind of points to this team getting its act together, but we have no tangible proof of that being the case.
Valid point. I
wanted to offer a quick comment on Shesterkin because his year is so bizarre. He's binary, really. He's either on or he's off. He's got 10 games this year with a 955 save percentage or better. But he also has seven games this year, 800 or worse, including five in the sevens, where he's allowing 4 and 5 goals a game. It doesn't make any sense. If he gets to 900, I know this is not breaking news, but the stats are kind of amazing. When he has a 900 save percentage or better, the New York Rangers are 18-0. 900. Not a crazy bar to get to. They're 18-0. I don't know. Interesting spot for Shesterkin. Doesn't make any sense this year.
No, it's been wildly inconsistent for him. Those numbers match everything you've seen. One game is great, then the next game, can't stop a puck. So I will say the Rangers team defense, though, 5-on-5, they've given up a lot as well. So it's not just the goalie. I think they need to tighten things up there a little bit in New York, no question. I think they got the talent to do it. But, it looks like, Carolina's, on a train to pass them here rather easily, it looks like, in the Metro. And so, those two teams, barring a big collapse, are probably going to be 1-2 when the playoffs start. But other than that, you got some great races. Look in the Central Division, the Avs, Stars, and Jets. They're separated by 2 points. The Jets have two games in hand on the Avs and the Stars. They have the highest points percentage. I think that's going to be a fantastic race down the stretch. Edmonton has closed the gap. They're 5 points back of Vegas. They have 5 games in hand, so they don't have to win all of them. And they're 12 back of Vancouver with 4 games in hand. So, that gap's even smaller. The race for the wild card now. Now, L.A. has fallen out a little bit behind the orders. So it's L.A., St. Louis, Nashville, Seattle. I think 2 of those 4 teams are going to get in.
Yeah, Blues have won 5 straight.
Hey, I said it last week. I got on the train before a lot of people said, get on the Blues train. A few things I've noticed different is look at the usage of Colton Parenko under the new head coach. He's playing over a minute and a half more per game. And his game is really elevated. He's a big man. He's so huge. He can log more time and he doesn't get fatigued. And he's really elevated his play there. They got a lot of other small defensemen. I think playing Parayko more has helped the Blues. Obviously, Thomas and Cairo, their games have gotten a lot better. But I look at the Blues team, and if I'm picking any of those four, I have the Blues. I think the Kings would still be my second choice after that, but St. Louis Blues are rolling now, and I'm kind of curious. You've said Doug Armstrong, they talked a lot about this was a year they might trade off some guys. I wonder if they still do that or if this is one where maybe they do one, because we've seen teams trade one guy and still make the playoffs.
I think they have to do something with a defenseman. I don't think you can come back and bring the same top four back into next season again, especially if you don't make the playoffs. Is Parayko the guy that makes sense? Because of value. He's the one guy on that defense corps that really does have value.
Oh, yes.
So would he be the, or is he, because he has value and because he's playing well, is he the one guy you keep?
He's the guy I wouldn't trade because you just look at successful defenses in the playoffs, Frank, and size and mobility has become now pretty much a guarantee. Now, obviously there's guys like Quinn Hughes and Makar and Fox who are elite of elite. So, they get a pass, but for the other teams, you look at the size and mobility of their defense corps now, and that's what Colton Parayko brings. So when I look at the rest of St. Louis's defense, they got too many of the same smaller guys. Those would be the guys that would be trying to trade. I know they tried to trade Krug, and he gated the trade last year, so obviously that's one. I think that maybe they look at Falk, somebody who would be interested. I think they can help other teams, but I think that's a change that they would be looking to make. They could trade Scandella, too. I don't think he has any value. You could get rid of him if you wanted
to. Zero.
Yeah. I wouldn't trade Parayko if I was the Blues. Again, maybe a team will give you more than you expect, but the minute you trade Parayko, I think then you're looking for a guy who can replace Parayko, and it's hard to find.
What would you do if you're Rob Blake?
It's a really good question, man. I think on paper, the LA Kings are I don't think they were as good as they were out of the gate. They were really dominant. And I definitely don't think they're as bad as they are right now. I think I had them as a playoff team. Right now, though, I think it's fair to say they're the fourth best team in the Pacific. They're not better in Edmonton. They're not better in Vegas. They're not better in Vancouver. Even when they're playing well, I'm not sure they're better than any of those three teams. So if you're Rob Blake, you know, you look, he just made a big splash, Frank. And that's the challenge for them is he went out and he got a guy that he thought was going to be a big difference maker for them. And so far, now it's early. It's only, what, 45 games, but it has been a flop so far for Pierre-Luc Dubois. The consistency hasn't been there. He's on pace for basically, what, 19 goals, you know, for $8 million. It's not what they expected. But like
his ice time, he's only getting 15 minutes a game.
Yeah, well, that's a part of it.
Probably a pretty good indicator of what they think of where his game is.
So that's Rob Blake, you have the conversations. When you look at their UFAs, like their goalies, of course, are both UFAs. But other than that, I think Waz or Matt Roy is the only guy on their back end. Now, you got some guys with term. We've seen, you know, if you're willing
to trade. Selling, they're definitely going to be, if anything, they're going to be buying or they're making a coaching change.
Yeah.
That's why I asked, what would you do?
Coaching change is hard because you don't. Now, you never really know. And like the internal guys would know more, right? Like you watch the game. Obviously, hey, playing Pierre-Luc Dubois 15 minutes is probably not a key to success long term, right? So, but you know, it's the chicken and the egg thing. Does he play better and the coach gives him more minutes, or really play better if the coach gives him more minutes first, right? You find that out. But you have to have that conversation, I think, with the coach and the player and say, okay, like, what's our plan of attack here?
They can't score. Since Christmas, they've scored over 3 goals in a game. Twice.
Well, that doesn't surprise me.
They're 2-8-6.
Yeah.
They don't have a single guy on their team that's a point per game player.
Yeah. It's not just Pierre-Luc Dubois that's the issue in LA offensively. He's the main one, but it's not just one because he can affect the other 45 minutes when he's not on the ice.
But I don't look at that team and say, oh, that's a personnel issue. That's why they're not scoring.
Okay.
So you think it's blaming the coach. I would argue against making a coaching change because I think undeniably Todd McClellan's a good coach. Last year, they were 9th in the league in goals for. How does that just evaporate?
Well, you know, Kevin Fiala is not playing up to his potential. I think that's fair to say. Right, like really, you know, outside of Trevor Moore, you know, I've liked Quentin Byfield's game as a young player. He continues to emerge. But, you know, I think you look past that, you know, they don't have a lot of guys.
Kevin Fiala is on track for like close to 80 points again.
Yeah.
More he's gonna beat last year and he's going to beat last year in goals.
Well, he's getting crushed. I don't
look at Fiala and go, that guy's not living up to his end of the bargain.
Yeah. Well, I just look at he's getting outscored significantly on a team that's supposed to be good defensively.
It's supposed to be a team that's structured defensively, and they're just not.
No.
They're a mess.
Yeah.
What's your level of concern on a 1-10?
Well, I still look at the other teams like, you know, Nashville and Seattle. Can they beat them out for a playoff spot?
Not about this. See, I would argue it's not about this year because you've had a team that's made the playoffs 2 years in a row.
Yeah.
Like, it's not about just getting in. This was a team that in the beginning of the year looked like a threat.
Yeah.
Wow. And they're not.
Not right now, they're not. The thing about the Kings is if they find their structure, they can be a very hard playoff team in a series, no question. Right? I don't like you wouldn't love it if you finished first and had to play the Kings, right? It's not you know, because there's no team. I don't see a Colorado here where it's, you know, a waste of 8 days if you're playing LA. They would be the underdog, but it wouldn't be like a massive underdog for me. Like if you know, you play Vancouver, let's say, first and versus fourth. Right, that they could give the Canucks a tough matchup if their guys find their game and their confidence.
Are the Kings right now facing what the Oilers did in the first couple weeks of the year?
No, because when you go back and you watch the Oilers game, if you actually look at a lot of the other 9 numbers, the Oilers, their problem was when they would make a mistake, it was just that they would gift goals, right? They'd control the play. They were losing games when they had 40 shots, Frank.
The Kings are doing that. Listen to Todd McClellan. Yeah. He cannot explain some of
the stupidity. They can't score, right? Like you're right.
The Oilers also weren't scoring either.
Yeah. Well, their power play, which is normally really good, was kind of average. But
how different it, like, I'm not saying just stylistically, but just pure total lack of confidence.
Well, I think confidence plays a part.
They're going through really that different.
Yeah, here's the one quote that resonated with me, and then we'll get to Tyler. Was another player told me after, you know, man, I really liked our coaches. They are great. It just seemed like they didn't have an answer to change things. And when Knobloch and Coffee came in, they had a direct plan. Okay, this, and their whole plan was rebuild conference. And that's what they focused on, right? They obviously changed some things. Paul Coffey says, hey, defenseman, no more just getting the puck out. We're making plays, right? And then as they gradually went along, they really eliminate the middle of the ice. So they had a plan, but step one was rebuild confidence. And so sometimes, you know, it's like parenting, Frank. You can tell your kid something and he's like, yeah, whatever, dad, looks like you're crazy. All of a sudden another parent comes over, or if you're coaching your kids and the other coach comes over and says, hey, I need you to do this. Oh, okay. And they do it. And you're just like, what the? Right? It happens all the time as a parent. And so I wonder sometimes as a coach, you've said all the things, somebody else comes in with virtually the same message, but it resonates different.
So what are you saying? You'd make a coaching change if you're, I asked the question, what would you do if you're Rob Blake?
Well, I think Rob
Blake, is not really an option. I don't think.
See, here's, I think the break comes at a good time. You get away. And I think Rob Blake probably, I would say this, Frank, I think he's going to give them another, you come out of the break. We've had a little getaway. Everybody has some space.
Everyone goes to Cabo.
Yeah. Reset. And then let's see what happens in the next five games. Those five games after is, I think, then he's got to make a decision.
I was just looking at the records. Oilers 2-9-1 to start the year. The Kings right now 2-8-6. Yeah. Since Christmas.
Yeah. Now the Kings stretch here has been a lot longer than 12 games. That's for sure. So, and I think Rob, like, patience has proven to be the good thing. If you really believe in your team, when you hit the skids, you don't want to panic. Now, some would argue, hey, this isn't a panic, as you just outlined, Frank. It's been a bad month of January, and even, you know, December wasn't where they want it to be. But I think the break sometimes, it gives them, everybody, a chance to reset, coaches included. And I think Todd McClellan has earned the right to have an opportunity to rebound this team. That's what I would say.
I would agree.
Let's bring in Tyler Yaremchuk.
Let's do it, and let's get into a new edition of Fill in the Blank. It's delivered by DoorDash, where for a limited time, our Canadian listeners can get 25% off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more. All you need to do is download the DoorDash app and use the promo code NATION25. You guys just talked a little bit about the red hot St. Louis Blues. I went over to Betano. I checked the latest odds. They are +220 to make the playoffs. That is implied odds of 31%. So my question to you, the Blues have a blank percent chance of making the playoffs, Jason.
Well, I'm on Team St. Louis, so I'm just going to go 100. They're making it, baby. Let's ride the Blues note. Frank's rolling his eyes. Hey, just remember, I was on this before a few other people. You know, Frank mocked it last week, and that's all right. We'll see. But no, obviously 100 is probably a little extreme. There's no guarantee. But I'm going to say like 81.
81. Damn. Frank?
52.
I don't know. Hey, every week. Let's just ask him every week, because it'll be, the percentage will keep rising.
But just tell me who I still, they're not going to add. They're likely to subtract.
They might just stand pat.
Okay. So then your UFAs can walk.
Yeah, they can beat St. Louis. I think they can beat Seattle. I think they can beat Nashville.
I'm saying it's like a pillow fight to get the eighth spot. Hey. And it's a straight up waste of 8 days, because any one of those teams is going to get rocked in the first round by Colorado or Vancouver. Absolutely smoked.
Yeah, probably.
Now, just remember, Frank, the only UFAs they're letting walk would be Kasperi Kapanen, Marco Scandella, and Sammy Blaze. Like, no offense. They're not having any.
I'm with you on that front, but if you have an opportunity to cash in with some value on some players for a team that acknowledges publicly this is not our year, I think that's what you should do rather than strive to be eighth.
Well, I think they could move one of their defensemen and still make
it. That says a lot about the eighth seed.
Fair enough. Greg's, you and I were talking before the show, Connor McDavid, 7 points in his last two games, and it still has him sitting, a nice cool 18 points behind Nikita Kucherov. He is currently tied with JT Miller for fourth in league scoring. So I'll ask you guys, Connor McDavid looking like he's heating up a little bit, usually is good down the stretch as well. McDavid will finish blank in league scoring, Frank.
Second, only to Nathan MacKinnon.
Oh, so you think he catches Kucherov, but not MacKinnon?
Yep.
Interesting. Interesting. Greg?
I'm going to say, now the one thing McDavid does like is the Oilers have a condensed schedule. He says he plays better when he plays more often. So, but I looked at it, like everyone's like, yeah, he's great down the stretch, and he is. But he outscored MacKinnon by 4 points last year down the stretch, making up 17, 18 points. Now he does have games in hand. So that's going to help. Let's even give him 2 points a game. So that's eight in those four games. So he's still 10 points back. I'm going to say he finishes third and he's within 6 points of the leader.
All right. And the last one I got for you guys here, this isn't an award that actually exists, but the idea of the NHL having a comeback player of the year at the halfway point. The comeback player of the year is blank. And I know I'm putting you guys on the spot a little bit. So I threw together five players who I think might be candidates. Cam Talbot in LA having a hell of a bounce back. Brock Besser is a 30 goal scorer after only scoring 18 all of last year. Victor Hedman's already matched his point production. Matt Duchene, after getting taken away by the Predators, cast away for nothing, goes to Dallas as top 50 in league scoring. Jonathan Drouin is playing top 6 minutes in Colorado. So there's a couple of options. Feel free to go off the board. The comeback player of the year is blank, Jason.
Yeah. You know, if the comeback is, as long as it's just, you know what? It used to be, hey, anybody who had an injury or health, okay, they're automatically. And so I'm just going to go off of just somebody who's refound their game, who isn't coming off an injury. And it's hard to look past Brock Besser. Yeah, you know, you outlined the 30 goals. You kidding me? It's on pace for 55 goal season. It's ridiculous. Like, good for him. It's been a huge comeback story just based on ability. So I will go with Besser.
Frank?
I'm going to go off the board, and I'm going to say the comeback player of the year is Sean Monahan.
Ooh.
I just, you know, there's a lot of good candidates. Talbot's a great one. His game has really kind of faltered of late, and that hot start that he had has really masked what's been a tough, you know, sub 900 run for the last bit. But Sean Monahan has 11 points in his last nine games. He's on track for 61 points. He's got 35 and 49. For a guy that played 25 games last year, he's on pace for 59. It's a pretty good story. Consider 2 years ago, we were talking about, is this guy's career over? And now he's back to being close to a 60-point player, and it's going to be a nice deadline ad for someone.
All right, there you go, gents. That is a wrap on this week's edition of Fill in the Blank, as always, delivered by DoorDash.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
And you like the mention of Victor Hedman there by Ty. He's quietly had a really, really good season in Tampa Bay. And you know what? The kind of the ageless wonder. I know there's so much talk about Hughes and Makar, and rightfully so, but I think Victor Hedman right now is, if there was three finalists for the Norris, he'd be the third in my books.
It's a good pick. I don't know. I wish standardized tests, he gave us five answers, A, B, C, D, E. Like, I would have been the asshole filling in the blank. I'm going to go off the board here. I'm sorry, sir. That's not acceptable in the SAT.
No, he did give you the option, though, to go off the board.
So okay. Well,
that was loud. Cam Talbot had a great start, but I think in his last 20 games, he's 901, where Rittich in the same time is 920. So, yeah. That's probably a part. Frank, you said you look at all the things in LA, then, hey, when your backups behind the same D is getting a 920 and your starter's a 901, then you're going to need more saves from your starter.
They also probably just played him too much.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, like, why don't you play Rittich more? His numbers are pretty good.
But, like, how do you run out of gas? Like, you have an incredible start for the first 20 games, and, oh, shit, I don't know what the number is, but he probably played 17 of them. Like, that's too much for a guy that age that hasn't played a full season in a while.
Yeah, no, that's fair. Well, Frank, have fun. You're going to Toronto. I'm going to Arizona. To Phoenix, and looking forward to a unique opportunity watching a Post Malone on the 16th hole of the Waste Management. You know where the 16th hole is, right? Well, he's having a concert there the week before because they got everything set up. So,
are you staying for Waste Management?
No, because I'm there. We're leaving this Thursday. The concert's this weekend, and then the Waste Management starts the following Thursday. So, no, I won't. I won't be in Arizona for 10 days, unfortunately.
That's on my bucket list. It's just a tough time of year with everything going on with trade deadline. 40 days from today is March 8th, the trade deadline, and got something new up on dailyfaceoff.com every day, including trade targets. New top 30 came out on Friday with seven new names. So
tease them. Who are some of the new names?
Well, Nick Dowd is one from the Washington Capitals, and people are like, who?
No, Nick Dowd's a good center iceman, man.
Yeah, there's been a lot of interest in him. Let's go through Marc-Andre Fleury is a new name as the Minnesota Wild season has faltered. Brett Kulak from the Edmonton Oilers. By the way, Anthony Mantha he's up to 14 goals on the season, which basically the best production of his career. He's on pace for 26 over 78 games for a guy that they couldn't give away. He's a guy that could be moved. Tyson Barrie's trade request has been standing for a while. We talked about the Penguins and Jake Guentzel and what happens there. Something to watch. I kind of forget who's new and who isn't. They're all blurring together at this point. Vladimir Tarasenko is a new one. So there's a lot going on. And
yeah, the Guentzel watch is one of the more intriguing ones. I think you look at a team that, you know, they made the Carlson move in the offseason. They obviously want to make the playoffs, but they're trying to look down the future. But I think when you have Sidney Crosby, I don't know if you can just go and rebuild. Like, you know, now maybe he wants out of it. That would be a fascinating conversation in the summertime. I'll tell you that. Could you imagine if they say, hey, Sid, we're going to rebuild. Do you want to be part of it? Do you want to move on? If he's like, I want to move on. The sweepstakes for Sid would be massive.
I don't think we're going to see one, but I was thinking about the timing because All-Star is different with the NHL schedule because teams have the bye week. You're either on the bye before the break or after.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, is it a blessing or a curse to get traded during All-Star break? Like, in some ways you're like, okay, it's not as much of a sprint. I can kind of get a couple days and get myself and my family to wherever I need to get to. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, it's like, but I'm sitting on a beach in Mexico. Why? Like, what? I just got traded. I have to fly home and pack my shit.
That's not ideal.
Is it? I mean, it could be, though, depending on how you look at it. You might be like, oh, well, I can at least, you know, get a couple days, get acquainted with, you know, the city, the facility. I don't have to rush to get there. Join the team for practice. Everyone's coming back. All of a sudden, you're the new guy. I don't know. I could see it both ways.
Yeah, there's really only nine teams not on the bye week before, right?
There's six games total between Monday and Wednesday this week.
Yeah, so you had like, you know, LA, St. Louis, Columbus, Seattle, Nashville, Ottawa, San Jose, and Detroit, Anaheim are the ones that aren't officially on their bye week. Everybody else is relaxing, and then will be a heavy schedule when we come out of the All-Star break. Quickly, Frank, who are you taking in the All-Star skills competition?
I'm going Nate Mack. No reason not to go with McKinnon. He's been that ridiculous all season long. He's a man on a mission. give them the extra mil.
Man, it's going to be fun to watch, especially they get to pick which events they want to do. You know, lots of guys are saying, like, I know, you know Connor McDavid's like, I'm not doing the hardest shot. I'm not doing the one-timer. Drysdale's like, I'm not doing fastest skater. He's not doing hardest shot, but he'll probably be in the one-timer. So it's going to be a unique event. I'm quite looking forward to it.
As someone referred to it this week to me, they said, it's 11 of the best players in the world and JT Miller.
Oh, jeez. It's tough for JT. I'm going to go, I don't know, just the shooty ones. I think I might go Kucherov.
I could see that.
Yeah. Like, honestly, McDavid could easily win.
So I don't think there's a bad choice among the 11.
No.
If you said to me, JT Miller, though.
I don't know, JT, eh?
Yeah. You know he's going to be a hardo, though. You know he's going to go after it.
Well, they all will.
Right? No, but him especially, like, he's going to want to feel like he belongs.
Well, yeah.
And I think there was some reporting out there last week that he said he's not doing fastest skater or hardest shot. So I guess play to your strengths. I don't know.
Oh, 100%. So it's funny because a lot of the players said the one that's the most taxing is the fastest skater. So if that's the case, maybe they should do it last.
It'd be an awesome way to end it.
Oh,
just a race to end it.
Yeah. No, it'll be fun, Frank. We'll enjoy that. We will chat in a week.
Thanks for listening to the DFO Rundown with Saravalli and Gregor. Keep it locked on dailyfaceoff.com and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from to never miss an episode.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, hockey fans, listen up because we've got something special coming your way this playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and let me tell you, it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game day, you're going to be faced with four questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle. And here's a sneak peek into some of those questions we'll be firing your way. First up, you got to pick the winning team. That sounds simple, right? But there's more. You got to decide if the total amount of goals in the game will be over or under a certain amount, and that's where the real strategy starts to kick in. Next up, you're picking who's going to find the back of the net first, and you're going to want to be careful because that's one that could be cooked early on in the game. And finally, you got to predict which period is going to be the highest scoring. Will it be a barn burner in the first, a shootout in the second, or a nail biter in the third? That's up to you to decide. Now let's talk about prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? For the daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards to treat yourself to some fresh Nation gear, and you might even win a jersey from your favorite team. And for the big dogs, those who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Play now at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.